We're live.
Hello, everyone. We're live at the Energy Realities podcast with David Blackman, Tammy Nemeth, Stu Tilley, and a very special guest today. That's Tom Nelson. He's a climate and energy podcaster and the producer of a new documentary, Climate, the Movie, which released last week and has made a splash already. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks for having me on here. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, Tom, you already have people trying to ban you.
Exactly.
You must have done something right.
Movie. Yeah. It's a really excellent movie, and I suggest that we see a clip of it now, Stu, if you please.
Doubt, both in the name of climate change and COVID, have sparked protests in Britain, Canada, and other Western countries. Anti-establishment politicians and movements are gaining support.
What they underestimated was the fury that this would meet with ordinary people who just say, you can't do this, so you suddenly get this new movement.
Many working people are not merely sceptical, but positively angry about the climate alarm and all that flows from it. There is a suspicion, or perhaps realization, that climate change is an invented
scam. I love the truck.
Driven by self-interest and snobbery. Cynically promoted by a parasitic, publicly funded establishment, hungry for ever more money and power. An assault on the freedom and prosperity of the rest of us. Punitive and restrictive policies carried out both in the name of climate change and...
Yep. There we go. Okay, that's it.
That's it? This doesn't really do it justice. You really need to watch the whole movie, everyone. Tom, tell me, how hard was it to make this movie?
It was really easy for me to make this movie because Martin Durkin did all the work. He did. He really did. Yeah, he's really good at this. I watched him do it. But yeah, he gets all the credit for figuring out who to interview. He did the interviews. He wrote the script. He did the narration, all the important editing. So yeah, he just did a great job. And the whole reason I got connected with him is because he did 2007's The Great Global Warming Swindle. And I think that holds up really well. I was a big fan of that. So then I had him on my podcast in October of 22. And just out of the blue, he said, you know, I would like to remake that. Knowing what I know now, I would like to do another one. And that really perked up my ears. I started working with him. It took him about 1 year from when he started to when he finished. But yeah, I give him all the praise in the world because I think he's the right guy to make this movie at the right time.
He really has done an excellent job. And I've been meaning to ask this, if you know, of course, were there any scientists who refused to talk to you or to him?
I don't know the answer. I don't know for sure who was invited and who didn't agree, but enormous amounts of people did agree to be on the show. And I think it's great. Willie Soon. I mean, there's the whole long list of a dozen plus people. We had Nobel Prize winner, John Clauser. He just won the Nobel in physics in 2022. I think it's so great that he took the time to be part of this movie. So yeah, I'm very happy that so many people volunteered their time. And that's one thing that kept the cost of the movie down is people volunteered to be part of it.
That's great. So do you think they need to speak out more than before?
Yeah. I think people are realizing it's just so important to speak out because this thing has gone so crazy, just so far off the rails. They want to control everything we eat and everything we do. And yeah, they want the central bank digital currency to put us in digital prisons or whatever. It's just completely crazy. So I think even way more than 2007, people realize that now is the time to push back. Because if we let them put these systems in place, then it's going to be hard to get rid of them. So I think this is the right time. And I'm happy that so many people are waking up to the danger of all these ridiculous alleged solutions. Because of course, none of this stuff is going to affect, it's not going to make the weather or climate better at all. It's all pain and no gain. So yeah, now's the time.
I heard that there was, I think it was maybe Al Gore or somebody was on the other day saying that this is a long-term thing, it's generations, and so we shouldn't be paying so much attention to the little things we're doing now because we're not going to see the results until much further down the line, which, I mean, that's cold comfort.
Yes.
Oh, that's clever. That's clever because you're never going to see any results from
you'll
what
never see it.
Today. going to be results.
Okay, I need a volunteer. I missed, like, there's just silence for the last 30 seconds. I don't know what happened. Yeah, I don't know if I need to come back in, but I couldn't tell.
Can you hear now?
I can hear people speaking, but yeah, when you played that clip earlier at the intro, I heard nothing. I couldn't tell what was happening there.
It played great.
Okay. All right. So if you maybe describe what happened or let me know, because I'm in the dark, what just happened here.
Well, that means you're married.
Okay. I am.
Okay. Men are in the dark.
Tom, one criticism I saw on Twitter that I think responded to my post, when I put it up and linked to it and praised it. One response I got back was from a lady who said, well, it's just a bunch of old white guys sitting around talking. I mean, and you talked about a little of this. We have a Nobel Prize winner, right? We have Dr. Lindzen, who is a professor at both Harvard and MIT during his career. This isn't just a bunch of old hacks, is it?
No, I mean, it's just a way, I think, to avoid talking about the real issues. If you're going to throw Clauser out because he's old and white and forget the fact that the reason he got the Nobel is because he proved Einstein wrong about this whole thing about quantum entanglement. Einstein thought it was spooky action at a distance in the 30s. And so Clauser went in there to prove by experimentation, maybe to prove that Einstein was right. But through experimentation, he proved that Einstein was wrong. And he won the Nobel for that. But now we're just going to throw this guy out because he's old and white because of how old his age and the color of his skin. We're not going to listen to anything else he's saying. That's just completely crazy. I'm not taking that as an argument.
You know, Tom.
Is Willie Soon an old white guy? What about Claire Fox?
Really? Yeah. Yeah.
There are not enough of them in the movie, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, James Hansen, who they cite all the time, isn't he an old white guy?
Again, I'm not hearing anything here, but
what's going on?
I don't know, maybe it's when Tammy's speaking. I don't know.
I think it is.
Tom, can you, if you can hear me now,
I can hear you.
Yeah. Okay. One of the cool things is that your interview with Dr. Patrick Moore, I've had the pleasure of visiting with him. He is one cool cat. I've had two-hour podcast with him. He is a true warrior as a co-founder of Greenpeace for the first 15 years. He was trying to end nuclear proliferation. Wow, I even said that right, Tammy. Don't laugh. And so then he was out in front of a Zodiac trying to stop things. But yet when Greenpeace went nutty, he bailed. Then he wrote his books. He is a class act. I loved what he said on your movie. Fantastic.
Yeah, he's incredibly smart. And there's this whole thing where he was co-founder of Greenpeace. And then, I don't know if you know this, that Greenpeace went and tried to airbrush him off the internet. They went back in there so that you can't find it anymore. But Mark Morano went back with the Wayback Machine. If you look with the Wayback Machine, there's all sorts of websites that say, hey, here's Patrick Moore. He's the co-founder of Greenpeace. It was so inconvenient that he was that they tried to, again, they go back in history and try to get rid of stuff that they don't like. Pretty amazing. Another great point about him is that he wrote this book, Fake Invisible Catastrophes, about all this stuff that's supposed to be happening on the other side of the world that we can't check on. He wrote this great book, and there's a guy named Jusper Machogu, who's featured heavily in the movie at the end. He was kind of on the Greenpeace side. He was buying into this narrative. Then he read Patrick Moore's book, and then his eyes were opened, and he's a smart guy. He quickly flipped to the side of reason, and now he's a great voice for reality in Africa and a great voice for climate reality and energy reality both. So that's just a real plus of Patrick writing this great book and influencing other people. So it makes me happy. That story makes me happy.
Hey, Tammy, you might want to try logging out and then logging back in. Maybe something just got messed up in that process. Because I want to be sure Tom can hear you.
Maybe I should that?
No.
We can all hear you.
Okay.
Yeah.
While Tammy's logging out and logging in, I interviewed Fritz Bunning. He is now on the Energy CO2 Coalition with Gregory Wrightstone. I've interviewed Gregory. But Fritz brought up some great points that the hotter, all of the climate alarmisms are being manipulated in the Antarctic. There's like 20 or 30 sensors that he found, and the data is showing, Tom, that it is nuts that data manipulation is going on, and he's got the data to show. Just because it's sub 70 degrees in one area doesn't mean that it's the hottest summer in the world, because they're manipulating the data, and he found it.
That makes me happy that you mentioned him, because I didn't know who he was till last week. And then I met him in person. I talked to him in person at the premiere over in the DC area. So now we're connected.
Way.
Yeah, now we're connected. I mean, I always suspected there was something going on funny with the Antarctic data, but I hadn't looked into it. But now we have him pointing out again that this is data is manipulated. And I just love the fact that there's so many people that are digging into different parts of this scam. So it's fantastic. I'd love to have him on my podcast too to talk about that.
Hey, I want to extend the invitation for both of you to come on mine as well, too. So let's spread the word. He is an absolute jewel.
Sounds good. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. As I traveled around, I was on the road for like 11 days. I went to London, then I went to Netherlands and to DC for these premieres. And I met so many people who, like Fritz, that have dug into different parts of it. There's one guy who spent a lot of time looking into sea level changes. And he's telling me all this interesting stuff about how sea level is not just a monotonic thing where it goes up a little bit every year. There's cycles in sea level, all sorts of cycles that I was not aware of. And you can't just take a low point in a cycle and another high point and say, look, it's going to keep going like this for 2,000 years, because it's moving up, it's moving down, and it's very complicated. It's not a simple CO2 related thing. Yeah.
How's the reception of the movie been like at these premieres?
Yeah, it's been really good. We had, especially in the Netherlands, we have 571 people there, and the Q&A was really good. So many people were very well informed about what's happening. And one thing that made me happy is, as I went through all these premieres, I had a chance to talk to a lot of people afterwards. For hours, we would talk to people. And there were people there that would attend. They were just there with their spouse or something, and they were not into the climate debate. So I like talking to those people. And a lot of them said, you know, I haven't really looked into these arguments, but watching this movie for 80 minutes made me really think about it. And now I kind of understand why my spouse feels so strongly about this. So yeah, very, very positive. And the criticisms, some of them say the movie's too long, and then some say the movie is too short. I mean, the whole thing is, that's the thing. We had 80 minutes, and all sorts of people would come up and say to me, oh boy, here's my one pet thing. I wish the movie would have spent a bunch of time on this. But that's just the way it goes. You know, the climate debate is so complex. We could not cover the whole thing. And it's more of a jumping off point. I keep telling people that if you're interested in just what Will Happer said or any little thing, then you can just use this movie as a jumping off point. And then you have to dig into it for yourself. And a lot of the people in the movie, I've interviewed them at great length, even on my podcast. So you can go hear Will Happer talk for a couple hours and a couple different podcasts if you want to really dig into what he says.
Or maybe you should just do a part two at some point.
Maybe. Yeah. Martin has said this is his last movie, but already I think it's not. So maybe there will be a part two.
Tom, can you hear me? Tom, can you hear me? I don't think he can hear me.
He still can't hear you, Tammy. I don't know what's going on. That's
you look nice, wild. Tammy. Tammy, you look very nice.
I can't hear or see her.
Oh, wow. I can't see her either.
Nope. I just see her name. That's it.
Oh, that's really weird.
Yeah.
Oh,
this is bizarre. Very strange. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's the UK does not like Tammy or Tom.
Or both.
Maybe.
And the movie.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, Tammy, you could, you know, ask your question and David could relate to Tom or something.
There you go.
Okay. Okay, so David, can you ask this for me? I'm wondering, since some people are looking at the Antarctic data, who's looking at all the satellite data? Because I know that there's issues in calibration, and Copernicus, which is the EU satellite data sets, the numbers are crazy. And I don't see how these are reliable. But Roy Spencer, for example, talked about that we have all this satellite data and this is so great. I'm not so sure going forward it will be as reliable as maybe it has been in the past.
Tammy wants to know if anyone is taking a look at the reliability of the Copernicus satellite data, like they are the Antarctica data, because she's seen some wild things coming out of that data and just wonders if there is any kind of similar process happening there.
Okay.
Dr. Spencer talked about it in the movie.
What? Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. That is something I need to dig into. I don't know what's happening there at all, actually.
But if there's a suggestion that data is being manipulated in one place, I mean, it's really easy to speculate that there is a possibility data is being manipulated elsewhere as well. I'm not sure how possible it is to manipulate satellite data. I know nothing about technology whatsoever. But if there is such a possibility, that's not good.
Yeah, I definitely think that we have to check out all the data. I don't trust the Arctic sea ice data. I don't trust any of it. I think all of it needs to be looked at. And Willie Soon had this interesting thing he was talking about. He knows this guy who was downloading the temperature records kind of every day. He was downloading. He had many, many copies of the same, what was supposed to be the same temperature data, but it was constantly changing on a daily basis. Like certain temperatures from the 1930s at certain stations, they were changing over and over, just in unexplained ways, just completely wacko. That here we are, whatever, many, many decades later, that raw temperatures from the past, you're just changing them willy-nilly. It really makes me wonder about what's happening. Yeah, what's going on here?
That all started in the Obama administration. We had a congressman here from San Antonio, whose name I'm going to forget now, who was the chairman of the House Science Committee, held a series of hearings about NOAA going back in and revising, quote, revising the global temperature records kept there during the Obama years. And every revision they made seemed to make it appear that the past was cooler than it really was. And it was obviously a pretty organized effort to create a case for global warming now happening in more recent years. Lamar Smith was the chairman of that committee, whose name I was trying to remember. And of course, he was completely demonized and smeared in the media and ended up eventually just retiring from Congress because he didn't want to put up with it anymore.
Yeah, I do think that Tony Heller may be the single best person online to really dig into the data manipulation and look at how the past just gets cooled everywhere. He does a wonderful job at that.
Yep. Yep. I was glad you had Willie Soon on, too. He's so entertaining. It's good, I think, to have someone like him as a spokesperson for reality because he is very entertaining and he makes people chuckle when they're listening to him. And I think that's an important thing to hold people's attention to this very dry subject matter, right? I mean, it is a difficult subject matter. You can't, one of the big problems I think is you can't communicate the truth about all this in 50 words or less like the other side can with its talking points, right? I mean, so much of it is about effective messaging.
One thing that makes me really happy about this movie, about the 80 minutes, is that there are so many clips out of there, so many one-minute clips, like just maybe a little more than a minute on the urban heat island, showing the map of Paris and how it can be 5 degrees centigrade warmer in the middle than versus the outskirts. All sorts of different clips, and I'm already pulling out some of those and putting them online so that people can download a clip that they like. Maybe there's some sort of discussion happening somewhere. They can download the 1 minute thing and then upload that. And I want to see those clips get to put online in lots of different places. I think that's going to help a lot.
Yeah, Irina, here's a question for Tom from a LinkedIn user.
Tom, can you see that question?
I can see it. I can read it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For our podcast listeners, because this does go out onto all channels, Tom, I'd love to hear your thoughts on these weather forecasting models and simulators that our mainstream media meteorologists seem to put so much faith in. Do you see meteorologists getting displaced by climatologists up and down our vertically integrated, I lost my place.
News networks within News the next network. 15 Thank years. You. Case in point, NBC has a climate team now reporting on hurricanes and blizzards impacting the United States. Yeah, so does every other major media outlet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know why you'd have a climate team that's looking at weather. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I do think that experienced meteorologists like Joe Bastardi is one who really has looked at history of weather and dug into it. And of course, he doesn't use CO2 levels at all to try to figure out what's going to happen in 2 days from now in a certain area. So, yeah, it seems totally bonkers to even use the word climate anywhere in there. That's all I know.
Hey, even better, the Washington Post has a fellow on staff they're paying big money to whose job title is climate advice columnist. He's the Dear Abby of the climate alarm movement.
And what's that climate advice like?
It's just amazing. He tells people how they need to be living their lives to be more climate responsible.
Like recycle and use less water and stuff.
Travis Lynn. I think Travis Lynn was the person who
was the one asking the question.
Posed that question. Yeah.
But speaking of meteorologists, the United Nations World Meteorological Organization just came out with a new report saying that 2023 was the hottest year on record, and records were not just broken, but smashed in some cases. Tom, what's your comments on this?
Yeah, I've been heavily reading about the climate debates kind of every day for hours, most days since 2007 or so. And I hear this all the time that whatever, it's the hottest month ever, hottest year ever. They've been saying that regardless. I don't remember a year that they didn't say was the hottest year ever. And I'm putting that up on Twitter as a sarcastic thing, hottest year ever as a hashtag, because no matter what, they keep saying that. So I don't put any faith into it. This last year actually was a little warmer, I think maybe because of that volcanic eruption, putting more water and vapor into the higher reaches of the atmosphere. So, but anyway, every single warm cycle we've had has been followed by a cool cycle. And the whole idea, it's going to just keep getting warmer and warmer forever. And Earth is going to become uninhabitable, blah, blah, blah. Of course, it's a total crock. It's not happening.
A great, great example of how it gets erroneously reported. Susan Page is a reporter for NPR. She used to work at the Washington Post, very senior DC-based political reporter, was on the Fox News panel last Friday night on their nightly newscast. And she said that last year was reported to be the warmest year ever in the whole history of the world. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Well, we only have records going back to what? 19 or 1860 something, right? So obviously there was a little history before then that we don't know about. I mean, it's just the way it gets thrown out at us is so misleading and really depraved in a lot of instances.
And they no longer care if it sounds plausible at all. I mean, we had the head of IRENA saying that wind and solar are the least intermittent of energy sources. He said it in all seriousness. At an event, at a public event, and I don't think anyone challenged him.
You're right. No one challenges him. Right.
That's the biggest problem. Nobody challenges.
Okay. Tammy's back. Let's see if you can hear her now.
Can you hear me now, Tom? No, you still can't. You can't hear or see. Okay.
This is discrimination.
Yeah.
So
it's discrimination. What?
I hate technology.
But at least you still look nice, Tammy.
But he can't see it either.
He can't see her either.
Okay, but can you can make this point to him then. But the World Meteorological Organization is a UN body. And so you have all of these UN bodies who are singing from the same song sheet. And so can you take anything they say with any credibility whatsoever?
So the World Meteorological Organization is part of the UN, and you have all these UN agencies singing in unison. Tom, can we take anything anyone at the UN says about any of this seriously?
No.
Good answer.
No, that's kind of the end of my answer. Of course not. I mean, we have to investigate every single thing that they say, because I do not trust them as far as I can throw them. I mean, of course, they've proven that recently over and over, that there's no reason anybody should trust them about anything.
Isn't so much of it. I read Stephen Koonin's book, Unsettled. Fantastic book about all this. And so much of it, you know, he goes through the IPCC reports and how they get rolled out. And when you actually read the IPCC reports, you know, they're not alarmist at all about any of this. The IPCC reports themselves don't support anything that's happening in our governments in terms of policy. But so much of it is just the way it gets rolled out of those reports, and the way Al Gore and John Kerry and all these alarmist spokespeople talk about all this stuff, right? I mean, isn't that really a big part of the problem?
Yeah, there's the UN chief. He'll talk about the IPCC and he'll say, oh, this is a red alert for humanity, something about that. And we got to worry about global boiling and stuff. And of course, this underlying science doesn't say anything about that. But then it gets reported as, oh, the IPCC thinks we're experiencing global boiling or something. It's just completely crazy again. I just can't believe how crazy this thing has gotten. But the truth is going to win out. I think the whole thing's going to crumble, and it's not going to take 10 years. I think it's going to crumble pretty fast, actually.
I do too, actually. Yeah. Well, I'm beginning to believe that.
I really hope you're right, because it is getting crazier by the day.
It is.
Yes.
It is. But as I talk to all sorts of people online, around the world, everywhere now, it's just people are saying that, I believed what the TV said 4 years ago, but now I've seen so many lies and I'm checking into the lies for myself. I'm hearing that story over and over, and that makes me so happy. A lot of people are coming. Yeah, they're coming at the climate realism from a medical realism standpoint. That there are lots of doctors, I hear. They have their own podcasts and stuff. They're saying, hey, I believed in everything that they told us, 4 years ago about the shots or whatever. And I checked into that. And now I'm looking around at other stuff. And I looked at climate, and I'm not believing that either. So that's very, I'm optimistic when I hear stuff like that.
Tom, when we take a look at the World Economic Forum, and I think, quite honestly, that chatterhead Schwab needs to really get an examination. We'll leave that alone. But when we sit back and take a look at, if they feel that they're losing a grip on their reality, and it's closely related to the UN with the World Economic, it is closely related. In fact, Irina Slav and I had a podcast together about a year ago, and we were banned by the UN. We had not only just a little flag on there. Do you remember that, Irina? It was like the UN, you bad. I'm like, yay, I'm a bad guy. If Schwab and the rest of the UN and the World Economic Forum, the world, the whole group, is they feel they're losing power. Do you see it's going to get even weirder?
That's it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think we're already seeing that. I think that there's desperation, and that's how we're getting to this global boiling point, all this crazy stuff. I think that's just pure desperation, that they didn't believe anything else, that, they just keep turning the knob up to 11 and 12 and 13, and eventually they're going to just stop trying. I think that I think so many people are scoffing. It makes me happy when I listen to, like, Joe Rogan. He used to believe in this stuff 5 years ago. Yeah. And now when it comes up, he's talking to Aaron Rodgers, he's talking to Alex Berenson, and they're not talking about climate, but then it comes up on the side. And when it does come up, they're scoffing at it. I'm hearing a lot of scoffing coming from these big time podcasters. And again, that makes me happy that we're making headway here.
This is really great to hear, because I've been thinking and arguing the same thing. They're getting increasingly desperate. They're blaming now. Well, the latest I saw is that climate change is going to cause food inflation.
Yeah, of course.
If we need a transition, it will be climate change.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who's buying that. If you look at the data, at all the data, that, of course, the crop yields are going way up. They have up and to the right. The whole idea that CO2, slightly longer growing seasons and a little more food, is going to cause wheat to not grow as well. People are not that dumb. They're not going to buy that.
Yeah, because of droughts and floods and hurricanes and whatever. Yeah.
But policy decisions are diminishing the crop outcomes.
Exactly.
No, they're not.
Yeah, Tammy just pointed out that their own policy decisions are causing that to happen, actually.
Right.
Yeah, then they blame climate change.
and then they blame climate change
for everything.
Right.
Yeah.
But that goes to the point I think Spencer was making about, or maybe it was Lindzen, about in the movie, about the fact that you have this whole cottage industry where government is wanting to get studies from academia with a predetermined outcome, and all the money is going into that. And so you get all these academics at research universities, going after all this, this government money, all this funding to further their careers and feather their nests and create the outcomes, the government wants. So literally every study, if you just make a a reference about, you know, the mating habits of tree frogs in China and how that's impacted by climate change. That's how you get the money. I mean, climate change has literally nothing to do with it, but it's all about a big money grab. And that's, I think that's a great point.
Yeah, that was one of the most enlightening parts of a very enlightening movie as a whole.
Yeah.
This detailing of how inserting climate change into every study, even if it has absolutely nothing to do with the environment or any natural sciences, is basically creating a whole industry is supporting this narrative, because nobody would willingly be out of a job just because they're telling the truth or they're not telling the truth.
Yeah.
So I think the pendulum has swung as far as it's going to in an absolute crazy direction on you have to mention climates and then you're going to get money. I think it's going to start swinging the other way as everybody wakes up. And now if you mention climate change later on, I don't know when it's exactly, but if you mention climate change, people are going to be less likely to give you money because they already know it's a scam. I think that's going to happen.
Yeah, but the people giving the money right now are really rich and they will keep giving the money to buy themselves indulgences or whatever. They think they're doing good. They are feeling important in supporting this transition narrative, the transition push. But you're right. I think people will start to get fed up with all this and they will somehow start reacting, hopefully.
Yeah. That's a good point. The people that are all in on this, they're going to go to their graves and they're not ever going to say, oh, we were wrong. And for I dedicated 50 years of my life and it was all baloney, like the Bill Gates of the world and Michael Manns, whatever. We're not trying to reach those people, but there's all sorts of other people that are more in the middle. Tons of people that I know, even I personally believed in this stuff. I wasn't climate marching or anything, but there was a time when I actually believed in some of this stuff. Tony Heller was like that. He kind of believed it. Anthony Watts. Yeah. A lot of us used to believe in it. So that makes me think that people can be shifted. Believers, the casual believers for sure can come over to the side of reality. And I think we're going to see a lot of that.
I hope we are.
We have
Steve Koonin said it was a career killer. I believe it still is a career killer in academic institutions. And so unless you get rid of that layer of people who are controlling the purse strings, who are the advisors, who are pushing their students in that direction, I don't see a fundamental change happening for, unfortunately, a bit of a time length there.
Yeah, Tammy just said that it's been a career killer. It still is a career killer. And until you change the people controlling the purse strings, you can't have a sea change in this, right? Because as long as the money's there to push things in one direction, you're not ever going to really be able to start rolling this stuff back.
Yeah, I do think
there are people like Cooney who teaches his students actual facts. He's not teaching them the...
But how long can he keep his job doing that?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
It's interesting that Koonin is able to keep his job doing that. And there's a guy that's been on my podcast a couple times, Dave Collum. He's, I think, a chemistry prof at Cornell. It's amazing
Cornell,
to me that he's able to be at Cornell, and he just gave an optional class for an hour where he just ripped apart the climate scam in front of his class. It was an optional thing, but he still has his job. It makes me happy that he is allowed to speak out at a place like Cornell.
Well, I bet he and Robert Howarth are not good buddies.
Yeah.
We had a question from a viewer. Canada and the EU and the UK are going full net zero. I don't see it faltering in those jurisdictions. The premises on which decisions are being made are not being challenged. And the policies for net zero keep coming, even though small delays are introduced. And that was, I think, right in line with Tammy's comment as well. And
I think that was Tammy.
Yeah, that was.
Maybe that was Tammy. That was Tammy. Okay.
But I do see, I think, even in those countries, as the terrible pain hits the real people in those countries. I mean, it's hitting the farmers in Europe, and they're protesting big time as these crazy policies are causing them just terrible pain, and they're not taking it. I think the more pain there is, the more likely that people are going to rise up and throw the people out that are imposing this crazy climate cult pain on them.
that's my hope too. That's all our hope.
And I guess this is more of just a real question. I have my opinion, but which is wrong 99% of the time. I did go to Oklahoma State University. But do you think that the climate movement is just a wealth transfer?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of that. I mean, I do think a lot of people who are pushing this heavily totally believe in it. And they've convinced themselves that I'm getting up every morning and I'm saving the children of the world from a horrible CO2-induced danger. I think a lot of people have totally bought into it. So I think groupthink is a big part of it. But I do think there's people at the top that know this is all BS and they're just, they want power and money. But I think there's a lot of delusional people out there that believe it still.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe here's an example. If you could pull the slide with the headlines.
You bet. Here we go. Is this you?
That's me.
No. Yeah, that's mine. Okay. The one I had in mind is the new climate reality stretches global freshwater supply. In keeping with our point that they're blaming everything on climate change, now it's freshwater supply shortage that is being blamed on climate change and on a growing population where demand for water is growing faster than everything else. It's like this place is warming twice as fast as the rest of the world. You know that. But there was a point made in this story that drew my attention. The point was that agriculture consumes humongous amounts of fresh water,
with the
implication that this is a bad thing. How do you see, Tom, this attack on agriculture? Or serious attack, rather.
Yeah, I mean, I was with this guy, Marcel Krok, who's a great climate realist in the Netherlands, and he was driving me around. We were driving past all these wonderful farms in the Netherlands, and he was talking about how crazy it is that people far away from there and there are trying to shut down farming to try to prevent bad weather. I mean, the whole idea that we should shut down our food supply to try to prevent hurricanes in the year 2060, people are not that stupid still. But bureaucrats or some people in power are that stupid, but this is way too stupid to last for too long, I think. The whole idea that every time it doesn't rain enough, every single time it doesn't rain enough someplace, CO2 is the reason. CO2 suppresses rain. And then right away, even in that same spot, the next day if it rains too much, oh, CO2 caused too much rain. These completely contradictory arguments. Again, people aren't that stupid that this is not going to fly.
Great question from Tammy. At the end of the movie, it was said this is very much a political movement. To what end, in your opinion? The first question asked is usually, do you believe in climate change? That is a politically loaded question, is it not? And that's for you, Tom.
Yeah, I do think, I don't know if it's really a blue versus red thing, but it's definitely insanity versus sanity. And it's big government control versus freedom. I think it's those two, definitely. That people who want the government to control every aspect of our lives, then they're all in on this whole climate thing, because every single thing that we do, you can tie it into the climate, and the government can get bigger and bigger with more control over absolutely everything. We have to eat the bugs and we can't eat the meat and all this other stuff, all this ridiculous stuff. So it is all about control and freedom. And I think Martin makes a good point at the end where I think he's showing the truckers and talking about freedom. And the whole idea of letting people restrict our freedom to prevent bad weather, this is so crazy.
I love the trucker in your video. I'm sorry, with a big finger to Trudeau. That's just way too cool. Love that trucker. I'd like to buy him some coffee.
But yeah, that whole effort to restrict freedom to fight climate change goes to a great piece I found at Time Magazine this morning, written by a professor at Uppsala University in Sweden. He's a professor at the Institute of Housing and Urban Research, okay, which, of course, has nothing to do with climate change, but I'm sure he's done a government-funded study relating it to climate change. Anyway, his whole thesis, Tom, is that the communist system in China is the best system for achieving the energy transition. And my whole response to that was, Well, yeah, that's what I've been saying for years now. And that's why, isn't that why every solution we see in America or Europe or anywhere else advances the cause of brutal socialism, right? It's all command and control, regulation posed as the solutions to every climate issue. So what the net effect is it not? We're moving Western governments further and further into a Chinese communist style of system to fight climate change. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's it. You said it very well. I wouldn't improve on what you said there. That is what's happening. We're trying to prevent bad weather, and the solution is communism. You see all sorts of memes that say things like that. And yeah, that hits the nail right on the head. That's what it is.
Yeah, so he's right. I mean, he's absolutely right about that for all the wrong reasons.
But meanwhile, oil demand continues to rise.
Right, exactly. For everything.
How do you explain this, Tom? After all these efforts being put into moving away from hydrocarbons, and because they're dirty and bad and release CO2, oil demand keeps rising, even with all these people buying into the transition narrative.
Yeah, that's a huge point. And it shows that they're not really buying into it. They say they're buying into it, but almost nobody, even the people who are rabid warmists, even they can't be bothered to actually behave as if they believe in it. There's a guy named Matthew Cappucci. He's on Twitter. I don't know if you've seen this guy. He's a young warmist, and he's just constantly talking about both that CO2 is going to kind of kill us all and about how fun it is to jump on a plane and go on a long haul flight on the weekends. He's doing both of those things all the time. So all these people, as I travel around to Europe, and you know, all the airports are packed and all the planes are packed. People are just, they're using hydrocarbon energy because it's so great. They can't be inconvenienced themselves. It's all about inconveniencing other people. And maybe the elites don't want the little people cluttering up the airports and all that stuff. It's all about forcing a pain on everyone else and leaving the pleasure or the wealth to yourself. It's all about that. Yeah.
So we have a question from SRB. Tom, have you investigated the involvement of state funding of climate NGOs, Russia, Qatar, China? Oh, from Russia, Qatar, and China. Well, yeah. Have you done that, Tom?
I've just heard the same rumors probably as everybody else, but I have not investigated it. I don't know the answer to that. I would not be surprised at all, but I don't know any details.
Putin has admitted in public statements to partially funding the whole anti-fracking movement beginning in 2008 to try to kill off the U.S. shale industry, which he views as counter to Russian interests. So, I mean, we know some of that is happening.
I have heard people saying that, like, the people who are throwing soup on paintings and gluing themselves to stuff and blocking traffic, that some of them are just paid by the day to do that stuff. I don't know if that's true, but that, again, would not surprise me.
I think we're seeing a loss of patience with those people, aren't we?
I think we are. I mean, there's a good sequence in the movie where it happened maybe a couple years ago where there's somebody on top of a tube or a train, and the working people just want to get to their jobs. So they're just drag the guy off so that they can get to their jobs. I love that. And also people like Just Stop Oil or whatever, they're blocking the road so people can't get to work. I think it's a war on the working class, and I like to see the working class fight back. And when those scenes were shown in some of the premieres, people in the audience were clapping. Because people like to see this fight back. We got to fight back, and we can't let these people keep us from doing our jobs. And we got to make a living still. We can't let the crazy people stop us.
On top of the train, that was Just Stop Oil in the UK.
Yeah, Tammy says that was the Just Stop Oil people in the UK.
Oh, when they pulled that guy off the roof of the train.
Off the train. Yeah,
that was great.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
From Tammy. God, Tammy, I'm so sorry this is happening.
Sorry.
It's difficult to trace the funds. They get moved around a lot from one group to another. Yeah. Money loses its character. It's like the Biden family strategy as well. Money loses its character was the conclusion from a forensic audit of NGOs in Canada. Yeah, hide the money. Money laundering, I think.
But we have all the billionaires pretty openly financing Just Stop Oil and similar groups, and they're probably proud of themselves.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff about the Hollywood types, the guy that did Maybe Don't Look Up. He is behind a group that's funding climate defiance. And climate defiance, those are the people in the U.S. that when, like, Senator maybe Manchin's trying to talk, they're getting right into his face and swearing right into his face and stuff like that. They're just doing all this stuff and getting away with it. But they are financed by Hollywood. I saw articles that said, yep, we're financing these people. So
yeah.
I don't know why we're letting these people get away with it. When they barge into places and stop speakers from speaking, I think we cannot allow them to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do it all the time, and they have been for since Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, Tammy makes the point that they do it all the time, and they've been doing it since the Occupy Wall Street movement started up in the early Obama years, 2008, 2009, which is absolutely right. I think that's true.
I think a lot of these movements are kind of supported by the police, or at least the police kind of stand by and let them do stuff, let them do illegal stuff because of
illegal stuff. Yeah. And the people at the museums where they're defacing the art, the only way they can do that, they're bringing cans of soup in or cans of spray paint into a museum that has X-ray machines and all sorts of security to enter. They have to be getting the willing cooperation of the people who manage those art galleries and museums to be able to do that.
Are you saying there's conspiracy theories?
It's not a conspiracy is not a theory if it's standing in front of you slapping your stupid face.
You know what the difference between a conspiracy and a theory is now?
3 to 6 months.
Yep. About a week.
Things happening faster these days, yeah.
It's about a week. Don't you agree, Tom?
I 100% agree. Yeah.
All right, where we go next?
Okay.
Want to do some more news clips?
Here we go.
Yeah, I did mine. You do yours.
These are Tammy's. Tammy?
Okay, so since Tom can't hear me.
Sorry you can't hear this, Tom.
So I don't know if he can see that headline. Can Tom see it?
Can you see the headlines that are up on the screen, Tom?
I can see that. Yep, I can.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first one is probably the most important one because all that Tom has said basically in Canada can't happen now because of what the banks are going to do. So the banks will now be asking for all kinds of climate information because they will need to reduce the absolute emissions of their portfolios, which based on the ISSB standards will mean that, for example, oil and gas companies will have to take their reserves. They have to calculate the potential emissions in their reserves, and that will be counted as part of their absolute emissions. They also have to account.
Tom. So the one on the left, the headline on the left, makes it pretty hard for any of this to get rolled back because it is requirements for banks to detail all of their own emission profiles, and that's going to radically discourage their investing in any future fossil fuel kinds of development. Did I summarize that right, Tammy?
Yeah, that's right. So scope 3 emissions, they have to account for the emissions in people using their product and the emissions in their reserves, which is, it's a killer.
They're forcing oil companies, for example, to account for scope 3 emissions, which the SEC in the United States is trying to do as well, to some extent, a lesser extent. And that's going to make it, which of course is impossible to do. But don't you think, Tom, that's going to make it really, these kinds of things are going to make it really difficult to roll any of this stuff back unless you can repeal requirements like this?
Yeah, it is definitely a concern that there's all this complete occultism in the banking industry and the financial industry. That reminds me of Clauser. I mentioned him before about the Nobel Prize winner and everything. He was supposed to speak in front of the IMF, and then they found out he didn't believe in the climate scam, and they wouldn't let him speak. I mean, right. Incredibly crazy.
Yeah.
And then
there on the right, I don't know if you talked about the carbon tax rise, but the whole idea that people willingly want to pay a carbon tax. I've seen different polls where they're asking people, do you want to pay maybe $1 or $10 a month to try to prevent bad weather in the future? And hardly anybody wants to pull money out of their pocket for that reason.
So
it's going to be hard. Once people realize how much pain again is being pushed on them, they're not going to take it.
Hey, Tom.
Can I just wrap up on the carbon tax issue?
Yeah.
So Canada has one. It increases every April 1st, like some bad April Fool's joke. And it's set to increase on April 1st again. Every party except for the Conservatives voted to support it. So the people don't want it. They're sick of it. And the government is doubling down, and they have support of all the left-wing parties in Parliament, which is everybody but the Conservatives. Yeah. And what's interesting is that the Trudeau government is the sponsor of a global initiative to roll out a global carbon tax. So there's no way they can repeal this and still keep face, you know, because so, here they are. Yeah.
Yeah, Tom. So the point is that every Canadian party in Parliament, except for the Conservative Party, which is a minority, a fairly small minority, voted in favor of this carbon tax, even though the people hate it. And further, the Trudeau government is sponsoring a push to implement a global carbon tax, which would make it impossible for governments who have adopted these things to repeal them in the future. Did I get that right, Tammy?
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, you know, again, it just, these are smart people. They're highly organized and smart people who are trying to put these things in place and make it impossible or virtually impossible to repeal them without a total revolution, basically.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
revolution will come when people have enough.
Yeah.
And they will have enough at some point.
I think it will. Somebody was saying, and I agree, that what happened in the last few years is that the elites, they were going for a great reset, but what they got is a great awakening. I think that's what's happening.
Yes, yes, I saw this somewhere too. It's very well put.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that to me sets up a situation where unless the warmest relent, you end up in a situation where it becomes increasingly difficult to imagine getting to a completely peaceful resolution to any of this.
They're not going
to
relent.
As carefully as I can say that, and they're not going to relent.
Yes. Tom, I'll tell you what. This morning, I got to give a shout out to Steve Reese over at Reese Consulting, and they do a lot of fantastic things over there. And the Energy Bad Boys are absolutely a hoot, Tom. You need to get them on your podcast, and David, you need them on yours as well, too. They wrote a great story about the energy transition and retreat. We're seeing this across a lot of places where people are saying we can't afford it anymore. And in this one this morning, there was a group in LinkedIn this morning. Steve Reese made a comment on this one. Fury after Exxon chief says to public to blame for climate futures. He is right. People are not wanting to cut back on their electricity. They're not wanting to go on this. So what's wrong with what Darren Wood said? And then this one climate group out there on LinkedIn is being pushed and getting extra pushes out there is nuts. I can't believe that. And then the last one that I have is Glencore abandons coal production cap as another climate pledge falls. This is coking coal. This is one of the world's largest miners and producers out there of coal. And we need coal. And it is, people are realizing in energy, we need energy. We need low cost energy. But anyway, I wanted to bring those up there on that. So
yeah.
Shout out.
Well, to more to that point, there was a recent, I'm trying to remember, I think a Quinnipiac poll that asked a couple of thousand registered voters in the United States if they would be willing to sacrifice $10 a month to help pay for climate, to fight climate change. And like 80% said no. I mean, literally the public is not willing to invest in this. Anyway.
David, I and Irene,
Tom, what do you see on that in that regard?
Yeah. I totally see that, that people don't, they don't want to fork over real money for any of this stuff, not their own money, just other people's money, of course. Yeah. Another thing I wanted to mention is we're seeing so many cases where bureaucrats are saying, hey, we're going to get rid of internal combustion cars by a certain date and go net zero and all this other stuff. But already we're seeing people saying, just kidding, we didn't really mean it. Let's push it back another 5 or 10 years. And we're going to see enormous amounts of that because they're not going to actually do it. They're going to just push it off and not
change
do
it. Is always just around the corner. Yes. The miracle solution is always coming.
Yeah. That was in in Tom Friedman's book. I thought that was interesting. I read his, what was it? He wrote a book about the energy transition a long time ago. And he had a quote in there about how there was a quote from over maybe 120 years ago about electric cars, about that the magical battery for cars is only 10 years away or something. But we've been hearing this for a long time. And this was at the start of the last century, they were saying that. So this is a very old story that magical batteries are coming, and they're still not here.
Yeah, they're still coming.
Yeah, they're still here.
Well, Tom, I do want to ask this. I want to kick this out to the team because Irene and I have really laughed about hydrogen and the hydrogen corridor going on in the EU and Germany really pushing on hydrogen. But this morning, I was looking at Toyota has really come up with a new internal combustion engine for hydrogen. And, you know, Toyota's looking at solving their problems with a hybrid rather than a true electric. Do you see that there is any hope? I think it's a long time before hydrogen. If we can't get $10 billion and 2 charging stations put in from the inflation porculous reduction bill. Do you think that hydrogen has got a chance?
I'll believe it when I see it, but I think I was reading in business magazines in the 1980s that get ready for hydrogen. It's coming. So, I don't know.
I mean, the hydrogen hub concepts will last as long as the subsidies last, you know. And as long as the government is willing to invoke favorable regulation. But what you see in the United States already is that the Treasury Department's interpretation of Section 45V of the IRA is destroying the willingness of companies like ExxonMobil and other big companies to invest in these things because they can't be profitable without favorable regulation.
Yeah, this whole idea that they're going to push us to some other type of car, a worse car to prevent bad weather. People are not going to buy into that. The cars that they push us to, they have to be at least as good as what we already have, or we're not going to switch. It's pretty simple.
That goes to Tammy's latest comment from Tammy. Reliable, affordable, secure energy is what makes economies and societies strong. And I think that may be a good way to wrap this one up because that's perfect.
Oh, I don't know, Tom. Tom and David, I hear her typing again with her angry typing on her board. So hang on.
She's done everything with a smile on her face. I'd be mad as hell if it was.
Oh, this was a lot of fun.
But yeah, we're pushing up on an hour here, so maybe we skip my headlines.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for coming.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed it. This was very fun. Appreciate it.
And everyone needs to download and watch the movie. It's fantastic.
Yeah, tell us where we can find the movie.
Product. Yes.
Yes. Tell us how to find it. Thank you.
You can go to climatethemovie.net. Just go there and you'll find it. That's the place.
Climatethemovie.net. And we'll put that in show notes.
Yeah, I myself Googled the name because I wanted to include a link to the movie in today's post on Substack. And I found it on YouTube right
now. Google let it come up. Wow.
Glad to hear
it. And Tom, tell us about your podcast.
Oh, it's just a podcast about climate and energy. I do 2 or 3 on the average week, and it's been going. I did over 200 total. I've had a couple of you, 3 of you, I guess, on there. Yeah, and it's really fun. They're normally like 45 to hour long, and come and see what you like. There's a lot of different choices out there. You can watch some of the old ones if you want.
Well, yeah, you've had the 3 good-looking ones on there.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to say that out loud.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great week. All right.
Thanks,
see you later. Right, talk to you next time. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.